Hare Krishna. Yesterday had a very full day. My days and nights have been very full here with preaching. It's very nice. We left around 1 o'clock here in the afternoon to go to a yoga studio. I could almost call it actually a yoga campus. It is very, very impressive. We're at 2:30. We were holding a program, and getting around Istanbul, well, it's more difficult than even getting around London. It's a huge, enormous city. It's just flush with wealth and opulence. I'm really very, very impressed. I think 16 or 18 million people, so that gives you an idea of what kind of place it is. And we went to the yoga studio where, and I put that up on the articles, where we had the first of a two-part series, lecture series, on Bhakti Yoga. They wanted to hear about the science of Bhakti Yoga. And thereafter, went to Gaur Shakti Prabhu's place, or his wife's place, Ariradhika, which was quite nearby, beautiful, on a hill overlooking the Bosphorus. And from there, we then started out on a trek on another program that started at 7:30 in the evening at another yoga studio, which was the best attended program up to now. There were about 30 people. And there I give a talk on Krishna's explanation or version of yoga from the Bhagavad Gita. At all of these places, we start with chanting and we end up with chanting. And we also distribute prasadam. People are very educated. Half of them speak English, even though we have to translate for the other half. They're university students, professionals, very good quality of people, many of whom, or most of whom, we've come in contact with through our Govinda's restaurant downtown. But the really wonderful experience that I'm seeing is when I talk about, for instance, yoga in the Bhagavad Gita and describe Vaishnava's version of yoga, that asanas are not a means for perfection, that perfection isn't something impersonal, that beyond chanting Om is chanting Hare Krishna, and that ultimately the absolute truth is a person, and Krishna just is not some manifestation of some superior energy, but he is the supreme. There's a lot of sort of raised eyebrows, nice discussion and argument. When it comes to chanting Hare Krishna, there's no argument. All of these people are in one way used to chanting, either because they are accustomed to chanting mantras, for one. The other is because we also hold other programs where devotees come and chant Hare Krishna. And so they've become somewhat used to that. Of course, when non-devotees get together and they chant without devotee association, the chanting is different because they're chanting without faith. And when they hear the chanting from someone who does have faith, well, that's a different story. It has a different effect. There's a different dynamic. But however they're chanting, it's certainly qualifying them and elevating them. It's giving them the qualification to be able to chant with those who do have faith, to ultimately themselves acquire that faith and chant. And I was witnessing this yesterday at both times, that when we're chanting, it's not like being in one of our temples, obviously, but in a sense, it was very, very similar. These people spontaneously clapped, chanted responsively immediately, stood up and began to dance, and were able to experience and feel the benefits of chanting. In our bhakti program, I told them, what you're feeling when you're chanting, that's bhakti, that's devotion. It's that feeling that comes out by embracing Krishna's holy names. And you can see that with different opinions and arguments, but the experience that someone has when they chant the wonderful holy name of the Lord, it's a language that transcends all argument, all philosophy. It's the best philosophy, the best preaching, best experience, and why Srila Prabhupada generally kept his lectures relatively short and always with the aim that let's chant Hare Krishna. Because when people chant Hare Krishna, then they really acquire a realization of that which we want to explain to them in so many words when we're preaching. So it's a wonderful thing to see that. It's wonderful to see the influence of the holy name and how it crosses, transcends all religious boundaries, all cultural norms, and gradually, because what I'm experiencing is something that now I've seen over a period of 3 years, how by association people open up, transform, change, and bring about the type of revolution that Narada Muni already spoke about in Srimad Bhagavatam. So that was the amazing grace of the holy name. Amazing grace. That is really amazing grace. And the other topic I just wanted to briefly touch on was that I saw in Dandavats that some time back Professor O'Connell had left his body at a relatively young age of 72 years old, less than 10 years senior to me. And I remembered him very fondly because in 1975 he came to Montreal. He had invited Srila Prabhupada's godbrother, Bhan Maharaj, to give lectures at the Toronto University, and then he came and he spoke also, I think, at McGill, and then went to Ottawa. And of course, we were sort of trained by Srila Prabhupada to be wary of academics' presentation of Krishna consciousness. Obviously, their interpretation as to of Vedic literature, the history of Vedic culture, the concept of the Aryan invasion in India, and so on. And their academic approach to devotional service, which often really derided devotional conclusions. But when we met Professor O'Connell, first of all, he was very young. Second of all, he was tuned into devotee terminology. He called devotees bhaktas and knew our language, knew how to interact. And he was extremely humble, a very humble man. And he was our age as well, not much older than we were. And I can't remember how long he stayed. It may be that he just actually dropped off Bhan Maharaj and took prasadam and then went back. Because then after that, I remember we'd taken Bhan Maharaj to Ottawa and to McGill, and he gave class. Anyway, that's sort of a controversial history. Srila Prabhupada was a little apprehensive and concerned about Bhan Maharaj's presence in our temples. But anyway, back to Professor O'Connell. He was a nice man. And from what I saw of Radhika Ramana's obituary and remembrance of him, he continued to be that right up until some short time to his passing when he last met with him. I'm always amazed at and inquisitive about the type of karma that these professors are living out, just like one of the famous Indologists of Hungary, who was a personal acquaintance and who had donated her entire library to our college of 2,500 books, that these people are really well acquainted with our philosophy, they're acquainted with our way of life, history, and so on. They may have their own take on things, and yet although they know so much, they can't walk into the house of surrender. Krishna consciousness remains an academic exercise for them. And what type of karma, what did they do in their last life to be so close and yet so far away? Quite an intriguing question, and I have my opinions on that, but I didn't really want to get into that at the present. Just leave that for another time, and now I have to get ready for a Skype conference, and then from there going out to our programs for this afternoon and this evening. Hare Krishna.